Welcome, everyone, to another Baseball America podcast. Along with J.J. Cooper, I'm John Manuel, joined today from the greater Boston area. I think this is the first time you're joining us from your new location, is Ben Badler, our national writer, and who wrote up the big trade yesterday. That's the reason for yet another Baseball America podcast. Ben, is this your first remote podcast? I think it is.
It is, yeah. I actually just had to figure out how to set up all the equipment, so hopefully this goes well.
Yeah, no, it's an exciting new turn in the Baseball America universe and staff. Sorry to not have Ben in the office. I'm sure for Ben's sake, he's happy that he could focus on things without me coming over to his cubicle and ranting about something or other. I'm sure the rest of the staff is sorry that now they'll have to be the magnets.
Now with more ranting.
That's right. More ranting for everybody else. But something to rant about. Late in the afternoon yesterday, as we were finishing the Baseball America Fantasy Mag, which you can look for on newsstands coming in the spring, or I guess later this winter, basically. But later in the afternoon, Ben sent the email, start seeing things on Twitter. I think Danny Nobler of CBSSports.com appeared to be first with the rumors of this deal and a big three-team trade. It's been a very active week and a half for trades.
It's been insane.
Especially since the winter meetings, two giant trades involving prospects, big leaguers, and this one, of course, the key participants being Trevor Bauer going from the Diamondbacks to the Indians, the Indians shipping out Shin-Soo Chu to the Reds, and the Reds shipping Didi Gregorius to Arizona. Obviously, other players involved, and we'll go over all that in this podcast. But JJ and Ben, since you guys, JJ does the Reds top 30 for the prospect handbook, Ben does the Indians. I think there's the two primary teams that we want to go over, and of course the Diamondbacks figure prominently in here. But JJ, talk about this first from the Reds' standpoint. This really seems like a situation where this is just a logical fruition to an organization when they build depth up the middle. And the Reds had last year at this time in their top 10 three shortstops: Billy Hamilton, Zach Cozart, Didi Gregorius. And now only one of them is a shortstop. It's Zach Cozart, at least in their organization. Zach Cozart's their big league shortstop. It looks like for the long term, Billy Hamilton has transitioned to center field and looks like he's going to be the center fielder for the long term. And Didi Gregorius was used as a trade chip for basically a one-year rental in Shin-Soo Chu.
And no, what the Reds have done, and really, we gave the Reds they were our organization of the year this year. And more than, I know I saw some tweets that said, how do you give organization of the year to a team that has not won a playoff series this decade? Fair comment. You know, that's truly fair. The reason we did is because of things like this. If you are asking for, in my opinion, what is the model right now for a small market organization's success, Rays are definitely a successful model.
No doubt.
No doubt.
Not the only model, but very successful model.
Very successful model.
Oakland.
Oakland
they
is
did
a
last
model.
Year.
But they're, you know, to me right now, if you said, what is a team out there with a lower revenue team, if you want to call it that way, that is built for long-term success, having already had some success, two playoff appearances in the last 3 years, second best record in baseball in 2012, the Reds are that team because they won 97 games last year. On paper, they're a better team going into 2013 than they were in 2012. That's pretty good. This is a big part of that. Their biggest hole, they had one giant need coming out of the winter meetings, which is they didn't have a leadoff hitter.
It was obvious, I think, even in the regular season last year, they didn't have a leadoff hitter.
They had the worst leadoff hitters in baseball last year, if you look at their numbers that they produced. But more than that, this is not a case of they had a leadoff hitter and they were batting him sixth or they were batting him second or whatever.
There just wasn't one in the lineup.
There was not one. There was not a good option. Your options were Brandon Phillips, who doesn't walk enough to really be a leadoff hitter. Your options were Zach Cozart, who doesn't hit enough or walk enough to be a leadoff hitter. Or Drew Stubbs, who doesn't do any of those times 10. I mean, you know, you can't. It's hard to be a leadoff hitter if you're hitting .213 with a sub-300 on base.
He's a great 1960s leadoff hitter, which I think we all thought that's why he did fill that role for Dusty Baker. But I mean, now Ben, I guess the crazy thing from the Red standpoint is they're actually playing Shin-Soo Chu's not a traditional leadoff hitter, and that he doesn't steal bases. I'm putting this reputation on Dusty Baker that maybe hasn't deserved. But I guess the big question, obviously both of you guys want to weigh in here, but Ben, you see a lot of Indians games, and you see a lot of Major League games, but Shin-Soo Chu is a right fielder, and Brian Ludwig's a left fielder, and Jay Bruce is a right fielder. So what's your take on Chu? I mean, first, give us your take on Chu as a leadoff guy, because I don't think he even filled that role very often in Cleveland. But second, on Chu and or Jay Bruce, which one do you think is better suited to center field in the Great American Ballpark, which admittedly is not a cavernous outfield? Which of those guys fits better in Cincinnati's center field spot for you?
Yeah, Chu is a right fielder. Like you said, he's not a very good right fielder either,
right,
which is why, you know, if he was a guy who, you know, maybe somebody like Franklin Gutierrez or somebody who's, you know, played right field but could play center field, somebody like that who could move over, you could understand it a little bit more. But Chu, you know, he used to be a solid right fielder. The more you watch him in recent years, his jumps off the bat were not great. It seems like his defense is going in the wrong direction. But, you know, I do understand what the Reds are trying to do, because you can't play. I'm not even sure that Drew Stubbs is going to hit enough to be an everyday guy. I don't, if he does what he does last year, I don't see how you can afford to put him out there every day. I don't think he's going in the right direction at all. Whereas with Chu, yeah, you're going to get, you know, average, you know, 15 to 20 home runs. He's got great on base skills. He's going to get on base for you at a high clip. So yeah, you know, maybe it's not a traditional play. He's, you know, probably going to be, if not the worst, then probably one of the worst defensive center fielders
right
in baseball next year. If they put him there, you know, maybe, you know, in a vacuum, you might say, well, Bruce is a better defender than Chu in the outfield, so maybe you put him in center field. But I think they probably wouldn't want to mess with that and screw up Bruce somehow. You know, I think Bruce could probably handle it in a pinch better than Chu. But, you know, the real thing is that, you know, they're excited about Billy Hamilton, who's probably going to step in and be their center fielder in 2014. So it seems like they're probably just going to put Chu in there in center field, see if he can, you know, fake it out there for a little bit and then bring up Hamilton in 2014.
I think the other thing to look at is that, kind of even mapping this out come closer to the playoff time at the end of the year, what this does mean is, let's say that Billy Hamilton comes out and has a very solid start to the season in AAA, where by late, you know, by August, you're thinking, yeah, this guy could be
sorry
worth
about that,
you know, checking out, you know, like, hey, maybe he's big, ready for the big leagues. If that's the case, well, then you're talking about some extreme versatility, because you could essentially, Chris Heisey is going to play a lot. Right now, we know that Chris Heisey is a solid backup center fielder, can play all three positions.
It looks like he's going to be a Shinshu Chu's caddy.
Some seventh inning comes around, I'm imagining that Ryan Ludwig or Shinshu Chu is headed to the bench.
I forget
if they have a lead.
I forget who the player was in the 1920s who backed up, and early 30s who backed up Babe Ruth, but his nickname was Babe Ruth's legs.
Yeah,
because he was the defensive replacement.
If Hamilton is ready before the playoffs, you know, assuming the Reds make it, but this helps them kind of on that path. If that happens, you have Heisey, who's a right-hander, you know, right-handed hitter. You have Bruce, who's a right-handed hitter.
No, he's lefty.
Lefty, sorry, left. Bruce is lefty. You've got Chu now. You
lefty.
Lefty. You've got.
And he struggles. And Chu struggles against lefties,
right,
too.
So what I'm saying is that you could potentially also create some platoons here. Billy, you know, Hamilton's switch hitter.
Right.
You could create some platoons here. You could. There's a lot of versatility it gives you, you know, at that point. And that's, to me, you know, is.
I like the way the Reds lineup really looks right now with Chu. We have Chu, Phillips. You're going left, right. Votto. The one question is, who's their four-hole hitter? Are you getting 2012 Ryan Ludwig, or are you getting some of the other years of Ryan Ludwig?
Or is this year that you say, you know what, Jay Bruce, who was near the top of the league in home runs, you know what, it's time that you're our cleanup
hitter. That's possible. I think you probably go Ludwig, then you go Bruce, then you go whichever third baseman you're going to play, the rotting corpse.
Right, Roland hasn't even said he's coming back next year.
Right,
so
I would assume it's Todd Frazier. But that top six is balanced. There's some speed, left-right. Arguably, I would say definitely the best pure hitter in the National League in Joey Votto. That top six is very stout. So then you're talking about Hannigan and Cozart. Hannigan / Mesoraco behind the plate and Cozart at shortstop. That is a stout top eight. If he's healthy, I guess Jason Donald, another part of this is a utility infielder there, and theoretically he should be better than Miguel Cairo, Wilson Valdez, et cetera. But I mean, like, that is a that's a National League championship lineup, don't you think, guys? I mean, potentially a National League championship lineup.
To me, the most impressive part about this, and I tweeted this last night, and this is where I say that this is now a model franchise for what they've done. That lineup you just spelled out: catcher, first base, second base, shortstop, third base, left field, right field, five starting pitchers, six relievers, locked up through 2014. You want to go to 2015? Take Homer Bailey away from that, and I think one reliever like Alfredo Simon.
So they're, with the exception of Chu, who they have an obvious replacement for in 2014, this is your Reds for the next couple of years. If you buy some Reds jerseys, you can feel pretty comfortable that this isn't going to be like that Diamondbacks Bauer jersey you just invested $100 in.
They should have some staying power. And the thing about it is this is not a team of 35-year-olds who you go, oh, those contracts are really going to come back to hurt them at that point. This is a relatively young team that has that core. They've got it all locked up for at least the next 2 years, really for the vast majority the next 3 years.
Yeah.
And then the farm system now, you get past number four and you have a canyon.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's – you get to put number –
you could drive a canyon arrow through the hole in their farm system.
You get to number 10 and you're talking past 10, you're really talking about a whole lot of role players and relievers and things like that. You know what? I had a couple of Reds fans last night who seemed like they were upset about, no, it's better than that. Who cares?
Yeah, exactly.
You don't need – what you have now is they have Tony Cingrani, Robert Stevenson, and Daniel Corsino to be the – if you need another starter, they got one. If you need a reliever, you got one. If you need to trade a chip, you got one.
And you
got
have
Billy
Hamilton
to fill in your one hole you have. They tender Shin-Soo Chu, you know, a contract at the end of the year, which you know that he's – barring a terrible season, he's going to turn down. You're going to get a pick for him, and they're set for the next 3 years.
Yeah, this is a guy who's been – the last part of this is just, to me, is that Shin-Soo Chu, pretty valuable piece. Obviously, he's a Scott Boras Corporation client, and he only has 1 year left on the contract. But this guy was pretty good for the Indians for the last 3 years last 5 years, I should say, except for with one exception. But this still feels like a trade where the Indians came out ahead, because for 1 year of Chu – they get Trevor Bauer, and I can't help but think, I know Trevor Bauer is not a Tim Lincecum clone, but in my head, I always think of what might have been with the Indians with 2005, 41st round pick, Tim Lincecum, sophomore year, eligible out of Washington. They offer him, I think their final offer was $800,000. Lincecum held to $1 million. They didn't sign him. The rest is history. That sliding door closed. Their window of opportunity slammed shut on them after 2007, and they've been in kind of in rebuild mode really ever since. And for an organization where their big league pitching staff was all the sinker ballers like Masterson and Ubaldo Jimenez, and guys like Corey Kluber and Zach McAllister who didn't quite figure things out. And then over the last 6-7 years, it feels like it's been which thumbing lefty are we trying today? Jeremy Sowers, David Huff, Aaron Laffey, whoever. Suddenly here comes Bauer. And here's a guy who certainly has some flaws, which I know we'll discuss, but a guy that really actually has number one starter potential.
Yeah, it's incredible. You're right. I mean, Chu's probably been one of the most underrated players in the game for the last several years. He had a down year in 2011, but other than that, I mean, this guy's been an outstanding player. Just doesn't get a lot of attention, be it because he plays in Cleveland or because he's not a prototypical power hitting right fielder, more of a guy who just gets on base a lot. But
because he's from the Far East. I mean, the fact that his English isn't his first language could be a hindrance to his popularity or being known. It's not exactly like he's a media darling.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think a lot of times foreign players, you know, younger players, yep, or even some of the older guys who don't communicate well with the media, I think that hurts them in terms of their national perspective, too. I think you're right. But yeah, I mean, look, he's, you know, 1 year left on his contract. If the Indians do what most people think they're going to do, they're probably not going to be a very good team, and they probably would have had to trade him at midseason anyway. So it might not even be a year of Chu that you're losing. You're talking about maybe even, you know, 3 or 4 months of Chu. So, yeah, to trade him and to get Trevor Bauer, you know, we were talking before, maybe if they'd gotten somebody like Pat Corbin, who I like, all right, that would have been a good trade, but to get somebody like Trevor Bauer, I mean, it's not a guarantee that he's going to be a number one starter, obviously, but he has that kind of stuff. he has that kind of track record. So to be able to turn the last year of Shin-Soo Chu, of control of Shin-Soo Chu into Trevor Bauer, that to me blows my mind. I realize that Trevor Bauer needs to improve his control and improve his command and throw more strikes, but this guy misses bats like few other guys in the minor leagues. He's ready for the major leagues right now. He might be the Indians' number one starter right now,
right?
Because they have almost no quality starting pitching at the major league level or coming up to help them at the minor league level. This trade to me was just incredible for the Indians.
I have to agree. And the surprising thing to me is to see a general manager like Kevin Towers devalue one of his own assets so appreciably as he did with Trevor Bauer. We've seen him in the last year basically on this quest to drive down the value of Justin Upton. And it looks like the Diamondbacks are probably going to hold on to Justin Upton.
We can't drive it down enough to make this trade.
Everyone else still realize, I know you're bagging on him, but he's still pretty good. But Bauer, boy, that star seemed to fall so quickly, especially for a guy who desperately wanted to be a Diamondback and really pointed to that organization as a model for him. First off, it seems like Jerry DePoto's departure changed some things there. Second of all, this is a guy who, boy, after he came to the big leagues, he wasn't that great for Reno afterwards, but it's Reno. It's his first year in pro ball. It kind of seems, guys, like you have to, I mean, maybe Ben, you can start here. It seems like you have to nitpick to not like Trevor Bauer. Even if Trevor Bauer is imprecise, even if his command continues to waver, there's not a guy, even if you're getting bad Trevor Bauer, even if you're saying he's like a third or fourth starter, he still has better stuff than anybody in Cleveland, does he not?
I don't even think it's close.
Yeah.
I don't even think it's close. Yeah, I mean, look, he's his first full season out of college. You know, most guys at that age, at 21, are, you know, they might be in double-A or triple-A. They kind of actually thought they rushed him up to the big leagues. You know, I don't think his command was ready to go to Arizona quite when they put him up there, but obviously the stuff is all there. It's a plus fastball. It's probably a plus curveball,
yep.
Depending on which scout you talk to, and the rest of the arsenal is average or above average. Yeah, I think they just, it seemed like he seemed to butt heads with the organization at times. And I think that, you know, I think that they made a mistake by giving him away and giving up on him too early. You know, Gregorius is a solid player, but, you know, I think almost everybody in the game would take Bauer ahead of Gregorius.
That's the part of this that was baffling to me, is that I know that I've seen a lot of teams out there, I've seen fans of a lot of teams on Twitter kind of asking, why couldn't our team trade for Trevor Bauer?
Yeah, exactly.
And there is, I mean, the reality of it is that you have to have the pieces to make it fit, and the Diamondbacks quite clearly had decided we're getting a shortstop back. And once that happens,
yeah,
there aren't many trades that can happen because there aren't a lot of shortstop prospects or even young shortstops in the big leagues who you would trade who can make this happen.
And didn't the Diamondbacks just trade for Cliff Pennington, yes, who I know is not a great player? But I think Cliff Pennington's a pretty good defender at shortstop. And if you're looking for the John McDonald kind of, he's your next John McDonald, which of course we hope at Texas A&M doesn't get rid of their baseball program like John McDonald's alma mater Providence did long ago.
Yeah, that's.
But I mean, that's the way.
That's the comment that you're not getting anywhere else.
No, but I mean, but it had to be made. But I mean, like, if you like your defense for shortstops, Cliff Pennington's that guy. Now I think Didi Gregorius is better than Cliff Pennington. I like Didi Gregorius,
but
this just seemed like. Like you said, Ben, I think Ben's comment, JJ, is the big thing, is that I would assume that out of 30 organizations, there are probably 27 or 28 that would prefer Bauer to Gregorius.
The best way to put it is this. When we do our rankings, that's not a hard and fast rule or anything, but one of the things that we look at is okay, if you offered this guy, as we've said, if you offer guy who's 10th on this list,
yep,
for the guy who's 20th on this list, and the team that has the 10th guy will offer for the 20th guy, then our list is wrong. We want it to be somewhat, yes, it's, you can say that, hey, we need it this, so guy in this group will trade for a guy in this group. But when it comes to this, there is no, when we've run our list by people in the game and all, I haven't ever come across someone who says, you know what? You've got Trevor Bauer too high. I think Didi Gregorius is better than Trevor Bauer.
That's never happened. That's ever. Never happened. That's
and
a great way to put
and
it.
Now, the Diamondbacks are the team that clearly thinks that. They think they've came out. It's kind of crazy. You know, KT came out yesterday. Kevin Towers came out, I believe, through a Derek Jeter comp on Didi Gregorius. Which
yeah, what he said was it reminded him of Derek Jeter, young Derek Jeter defensively.
Defensively. Okay.
Which, of course, has never been Derek Jeter's strong suit,
but
ever.
But that being said, could this trade work out in the long run for the Diamondbacks? It's possible. Let's if we find out that Trevor Bauer is so hard-headed that he'll never make adjustments to succeed the big league level, is it possible that that'll happen? I guess it's possible.
Yeah.
Is it possible that Didi Gregorius? There are some scouts think that he's a second division guy. He's a bottom of the order hitter who's never going to hit enough to really. He'll be good defensively. Never hit enough to really be an impact guy. He's just going to be a solid, useful, everyday shortstop if you can live a bad, you know, not so good offense. Other guys think there's some athleticism there.
There's some thump.
He's getting
there.
Stronger.
People think there's some
there's
power.
There's some power.
There. Not
there's,
huge power. Not like he's going to hit 15 home runs. But this guy, honestly, his profile to me, JJ, sounds like a left-handed hitting Zach Cozart.
No,
I think Zach Cozart will get better from last year, but you know, I feel like if he has a rookie year in 2013, if you're projecting him out, what kind of years is he going to have? Look at what Zach Cozart did for the Reds, and I think that Didi Gregorius will do something like that. It might be a little bit harder for him because he's left-handed. Late in games, he's going to see left-handed pitchers like most lefties do.
The one thing about that is I'd say I think that Gregorius has a chance to hit for higher average than Cozart. I don't think he's ever going to hit for the power. Cozart.
I agree. A little bit higher average, lower power version.
Right.
That's fair.
I think Cozart has some more power than the average shortstop. But let's say that happens. Power falls in his face. In hindsight, you can say then the Diamondbacks did a good trade. The reality of it is, though, you could still argue even then that maybe not, because as we stand here right now, I think the consensus in baseball is that Trevor Bauer had more value than that.
Yeah, they sold him low in terms of his value. And the other vexing thing, Ben, we talked about this off air, but the other players that they got in this trade, Lars Anderson, I'm blanking on the other player, Tony Sipp. Tony Sipp's a useful left-hander. Also, as you researched, one of the better players the Indians have drafted in the last 10 years. One of the more successful big league careers. And what was he, a 41st, 42nd round pick?
But yeah, 45th, I think.
45th, there you go. But man, the inclusion of Lars Anderson in this trade, if you're Lars Anderson, first of all, you went from having a chance to compete with Rule 5 pick Chris Bogaerts for the first base job in Cleveland. I'm not sure how much of a audience he would have gotten there, but I don't think it's a small thing that was in Lars Anderson's favor. You know, Terry Francona was manager in Boston when Lars Anderson was on his way up the Boston chain. Terry Francona saw Lars Anderson when he was a big deal, when Lars Anderson was going good. I think if Lars Anderson was ever going to get a real chance to be an everyday first baseman, it was going to be in Cleveland in 2013 with Terry Francona as his manager. Now he goes to Arizona as like an afterthought part of this deal, and he's blocked by Paul Goldschmidt, the stolen base in his first baseman in the big league with his 18 steals last year, and a rising star. I mean, that the whole thing's vexing from Arizona's standpoint, Ben.
Yeah, I think he should probably get comfortable in the Pacific Coast League.
That's
I mean,
right.
It's,
get comfortable
good
in
news.
Tucson.
It's been
good
a
news
long
in Reno,
time.
You can, you know, if you have a four-year, you'll hit 340.
That's right. He could, but the Gregorius part of this. What was your take on Gregorius as a prospect and the Arizona motivation for this deal?
I mean, you know, I think if you talk to people around the game, Kevin Tower seems to have he seems to really be drawn to that glove first, really good defensive shortstop, and that's what Gregorius is. You know, he's not Jose Iglesias or Echeverria or Freddie Galvis with a bat. I think there's a little bit more upside than people are probably giving him credit for right now in terms of his offensive upside. But yeah, I mean, it's mostly a defensive first profile. He's not going to hit for a lot of power. He makes a lot of contact. You hope that the plate discipline improves and he can be a guy who can hit for a high average and get on base, but you're projecting quite a bit there. You know, he's not a total slap and run guy. He's got some size on him. He's 6'1", You know, he hit six home runs last year in AAA, and I think it was like 48 games. But, you know, he's not a total zero offensively like some of these other guys, like Iglesias, frankly. But,
right.
But it's a defensive first profile. He's probably not going to hit at the top of the order. Like we said, you know, he's a solid prospect for what he is, but to give up Trevor Bauer, I realize that they have a lot of good young pitching there, guys like Skaggs and Corbin and everybody else they have in their major league rotation, but with positional jams, especially if we're talking about pitching, you know, maybe with the Rays being the one exception, you know, that seems to always work itself out. Somebody's going to get hurt. Somebody's stuff is going to go backwards. There's going to be an opening. And I think there's absolutely would have been an opening somewhere in there for Trevor Bauer, considering that he might be a frontline starting pitcher and might be that kind of guy immediately. So Gregorius, solid player for who he is. You know, I like him. I think he could be an everyday guy in the big leagues, but to give up Bauer, I just don't get it.
Yeah, it's vexing.
Another thing to me is that I don't think that this necessarily – this trade doesn't even make the big league club for the Diamondbacks better. It just, your hope if you're the Diamondbacks is that this gets you back to where you were starting last year. Because at the start of last year, you had Steven Drew. I know he got hurt, you know, in 2012. But I don't think it's fair to expect Didi Gregorius to do more than that in 2013 than what you would have expected, what Steven Drew in a normal year could produce.
Yeah, I think from their standpoint, obviously Kevin Towers, I think, thinks it makes them better for 2013. I think he thinks he improved himself. In his mind and to his scouting eye, that Didier Gregorius is an upgrade over what they had. Whether he's better than Steven Drew or not, they didn't have Steven Drew anymore.
Right.
So he's better than what they had, and he's cost controlled going forward. I think he thinks he got himself a player who's going to be, when they're looking at their team, they're thinking, okay, up the middle now they have Adam Eaton in center field. In their minds, and I think they're probably right about this, they've upgraded offensively and maybe a little bit less defense than Chris Young, but they've upgraded offensively, and I agree. I like Adam Eaton, Didi Gregorius, but they're going to be young is my point. They're going to have a rookie center fielder, a rookie shortstop, Aaron Hills at second base, and I'm coming off a monster year, but Aaron Hills had good years and bad years in the past. I always loved Aaron Hill, loved him in college at LSU, loved him with Team USA. Great makeup guy. I'm happy for Aaron. I hope he has success. He's one of my favorite players of the big leagues. Stealth cheeseball, Aaron Hill. And then Miguel Montero behind the plate. There's some real offensive upside there, guys, with a good year out of Hill. If you get good Aaron Hill, Miguel Montero is a very underrated player, big offensive factor behind the plate. And Adam Eaton, I think, is a premium leadoff type guy. In fact, Adam Eaton really fits what the Reds really wanted. He fits better than Shin-Soo Choo. He's not as good a player, but he fits better from a defensive standpoint and a leadoff guy than Shin-Soo Choo. That would have been interesting. Gregorius for Eaton if they hadn't already made the trade.
I think if you'd have done that, you'd have to be. I do think that would have had to have been Eaton and something for Gregorius. I do think that Gregorius is a better prospect because you're talking about.
But it's harder to find a shortstop than it is a center fielder.
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying that the Diamondbacks would have to throw something on top of Eaton to make that trade happen. Not that the Diamondbacks don't have chips that they could do. You know, you could.
That's a good hypothetical.
If you're throwing the hypothetical out there, it's like, okay, well, you know, clearly you don't like Chris Owings. If you're trading for Didi Gregorius,
that's another good point.
Owings and Eaton for Gregorius.
That's another good point. Chris Owings, not like we were worried about him being blocked, but that is a guy who is you could have made the case that Pennington was the placeholder for Chris Owings down the line,
and now
that's not happening. So this is a Baseball America podcast with John and JJ and Ben. And Ben, I guess I'm wondering, going back to the Indians for a minute, what's with Bauer, do you think there's a trade that helps them? I mean, obviously, I think we all agree it helps them. Do you feel is there anything in this trade, could Bauer be good enough to make them contend in the AL Central in 2013? Because the AL Central is, I feel, very winnable for any of those teams, even with the improvements the Tigers have made and even with the improvements we think that the Royals have made this offseason. 88 wins, you know, last year for Detroit, that feels like a winnable division. Or would there still be more things that have to happen for for Cleveland to contend? I guess the other positive out of this for Cleveland is they held on to Asdrubal Cabrera.
Exactly. I think that a lot of things would have to go their way and break right for them to be able to contend next year. But, you know, that was the same case with the Orioles. It was the same case with the A's last year. So They're in the right division for it. That's certainly true. And like you said, they kept Cabrera, which to me is, you know, that he to me is a more valuable trade ship than Shin-Soo Chu.
Yep, I agree.
So Chu is a guy I think they probably would have had to trade at midseason anyway. So Bauer is a guy who could step in. I wouldn't be surprised if he could step in immediately and give you an ERA somewhere in the mid threes or so, and give you, you know, 150, 200 innings, depending on if they start him in their opening day or in their on their big league team right out of the gate or not. But I mean, that could almost make up for, or it could make up for the loss of Chu in itself. And you still have Cabrera. You do have a good nucleus there. I like up the middle of hitters with guys like Santana, Kipnis. You know, Cabrera is still there for now. You know, these guys are all young, you know, is still in their mid-20s, coming into their primes. You have Michael Brantley. I don't really like Drew Stubbs all that much, yeah. But he's there too.
All I know is that I would love to be a pitcher. If I were a major league pitcher, I would look forward to facing the Indians and say, please, please let Mark Reynolds and Drew Stubbs be in the lineup tonight. I'm going to pad that strikeouts per nine. I mean, if you miss, hey, if you miss, both those guys can lose it. You know, Mark Reynolds got hot sometimes for the Orioles. He was a factor for them this year. But those two guys are strikeout-tastic. I mean, those are two of how many players in Major League history have struck out more than 200 times? They're two of them. They're like four or five guys in history who've done it, and two of them are in the same Cleveland Indians lineup right now.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Drew Stubbs has got to do something because you can't put up the numbers he did last year and expect to play every day. But he might. He might. But then they also have Chisenhall, too, who, you know, I think people might forget about. But he's another young guy who has a chance to really come out this year. You know, they have some – I really do think they have some solid pieces in their lineup who are young guys in their prime – guys they can build around in the lineup, but the pitching was just, especially the starting pitching, was just such a disaster last year. That's where that's the biggest need that they had, and they got, you know, maybe the best pitching prospects in the game, or certainly one of the best pitching prospects in the game, and a guy who's going to help them next year.
I will say this. I will disagree with you a little bit. I think Bauer is a very good pitching prospect. I can think of four or five guys I'd rather have than him because of I do think
but
that
he was in the discussion. I don't think there's a doubt. I mean, I would take Dylan Bundy Jose Fernandez easily over him. But who's next? He was in the discussion for three. I think that's a pretty fair thing to say.
He's in the discussion for three. I do think we need to touch on a little bit of this is going to be interesting also from the standpoint of seeing we talked about it with Mike Montgomery on the last podcast. Now it's on Mike Montgomery. If he succeeds, the Royals screwed him up. If he fails, well, you know what? It wasn't the Royals. It was
you. Mean Trevor Bauer's former Hart-High teammate?
Exactly, Hart-High teammate. Well, now with Trevor Bauer, if Trevor Bauer goes out and pitches,
I will also say he's nowhere near Mike Montgomery's failure rate.
No, I see
what you're saying,
right.
I'm not saying he is
because he hasn't had a stretch of two starts as bad as Mike Montgomery's had for the last 2 years. But what I'm saying though is that the Diamondbacks right now essentially tarred him as they traded him away. They publicly came out and said, this guy won't listen to instruction.
Yeah.
Say that again, Ben.
That was dumb.
I agree.
I don't see the value of that. You're right. But they did. Well, now what we're going to find out is now what we're going to see is, okay, you know what? Trevor Bauer goes to the Indians and pitches well. The Diamondbacks look really, as you said, they look dumb here.
They will. And
if he doesn't, if he falls on his face, if somehow that happens, you know what then? At that point, then the spotlight turns to Trevor Bauer because he is a very strong-willed pitcher. That's generally a good quality in pitchers. He is very focused on studying the game, studying the craft of pitching. He has his throwing program. He has all these things that he very strongly believes in.
Absolutely. He has conviction to use the scouting term.
If that doesn't work, it's all on him because it's his. This is not a guy who you say, well, it's not working because they really screwed him up and changed him.
The guy threw 146, 147 innings last year in the regular season, then threw in the Pacific Coast League playoffs, and then, of course, the AAA National Championship game where we all saw him either on TV or locally here in Durham. And that's where Matt Eddy, I think famously, I'll say famously for our podcast listeners, but where Matt Eddy threw the comp on him, not necessarily a body comp or whatever, but Ben, I think we've talked about it. He threw the Daisuke comp on him, Daisuke Matsuzaka. And I have to say, that analogy really resonated with me as a guy who has his own, who's not a team player as far as his throwing program. He's not a conformist. He does not, Daisuke had his own plan. Trevor Bauer had his own plan. Daisuke was stubborn, didn't want to change. Trevor Bauer. Daisuke had a big time fastball, but pitched backwards, did not challenge hitters, excessive nibbling, poor tempo. All those critiques could be thrown on Trevor Bauer as well. When Matt Eddy made that comparison, it really threw me because I thought it fit. I thought it fit very well. And I won't say I fully jumped off the Trevor Bauer bandwagon, but I'm no longer driving it, that's for sure. And when he was a freshman and sophomore, especially when he was a sophomore at UCLA, I was driving that thing. I was right up front like Kramer driving that, I guess Kramer was in the back when he was driving the fire engine, so it doesn't really work. But I was up front. I was at the front of that Trevor Bauer bandwagon. Do you like that Daisuke comparison? And if you don't, why not?
Well, there's a couple things. One, when Daisuke came over, first of all, when he came over, the first season he struck out over 200 guys. The next season, he had an ERA under 3.
Great point.
He was a very effective pitcher. Now he's unbearable to watch, but when he first came over, he was a very good pitcher. Wild, sure, but he was an effective pitcher. The other thing is that when he came to the Red Sox, he was also 26 years old.
And had done it for like 7 years in the Japanese majors, was a rock star in Japan, and there were good reasons for him to believe that what he did worked. I agree with
you. Yeah. Trevor Bauer is 21 years old. I think there's a lot of differences there. I think a lot of his, what gets perceived maybe as stubbornness is just I think it gets presented in a very one-sided way. Why don't we ever say, oh, maybe the team is the one that's being stubborn? I'm not saying that's the case here necessarily, but in all these cases, whenever a guy gets traded or there's some perceived issue with attitude or something like that, it's always put on the player's inability to adjust or adapt or whatever they want to say, publicly or privately.
The player might be right.
It's never put on the team, and that's, I think a lot of that is because the people in the media are getting their information not from the player, but they're getting it from the team and the team officials. So I think the information gets presented in a very, one-sided way. I mean, remember when the Mets traded Scott Kazmir, I think they knocked his makeup after they traded him. There's plenty of guys. Matt Latos is a guy who,
yep,
has had his makeup very heavily criticized, but so what? I mean, the guy has frontline stuff. He's had outstanding success in AA, AAA. He's 21 years old. He does have to improve his command a little bit, but, I mean, geez, so did Tim Lincecum when he first came up. I don't see it being an issue, and I don't really see, I understand where they're coming from with, the Daisuke stuff, but to me it doesn't really fit. I think Bauer is going to have a much, much better career than Daisuke ever had.
That was a great answer. You got me back on the bandwagon, but that was a great answer because you're right. Daisuke was good his first 2 years. The guy won 33 games, helped win a World Series. ERA was above the league average both those years. He dealt with the Crucible of Boston, which Bauer will not be dealing with in Cleveland. I don't think anyone's ever used the word Crucible in Cleveland as far as a sports franchise before. I think you hit the nail on the head. If you want to look at the half-empty part of Trevor Bauer, even the half-empty part, is better than what they've got in Cleveland. So there's just no...
Oh, this is a no-lose trade for the Indians.
Just no lose for them.
No
and like
lose.
You, and I think the biggest point that you brought up in the very first segment, Ben, was getting Trevor Bauer for a year of Shinshu Chu. Just imagine if / when they were out of it and they're looking to deal Chu in June and July, JJ, they wouldn't have sniffed a pitcher like Trevor Bauer.
The only reason they would have sniffed a pitcher like Trevor Bauer is if he would have basically imploded completely and but sitting at the trade deadline with an ERA somewhere around 20. I mean, that's the only way you're going to get a guy like that.
A guy with that kind of arm.
And if they had never called up Trevor Bauer, because what really is the blemish on his track record other than those, it seems like those four starts that he had in the big leagues, you know, all 16 innings of them. Yeah, he didn't pitch well there, but if you take that out of his track record and then in the playoffs too, I guess once he got back down to Triple A, but if he spent the entire year in the minor leagues, I think people would view him in a much different light. But for whatever reason, I think those four starts when he got to Arizona seemed to be coloring the opinions of him when this is just an outstanding pitching prospect who just had a bit of a rough go at the end of
it. And it's worth noting, you're talking about a guy who made, I mean, as you said, we're talking about basically five big league starts, and one of those was really good.
Right. And I do think that Triple A start, it wasn't just that he couldn't, he had a 10-1 or 9-1 lead. There was a big lead, and he wouldn't throw strikes. His body language was bad. He walked bottom of the order hitters twice in the Pawtucket lineup and couldn't make it to the fifth inning. And then when he got taken out with after four and two-thirds innings, he really threw a tantrum, basically, to Brett Butler, the ex-big leaguer who was his manager. But even still, he's 21. I'm not making excuses for him. I'm saying if I were the Diamondbacks, I would back off, 21 years old. They know him better, but I think everybody knows Trevor Bauer. He's, you know, frankly, he's pretty public about this stuff. He doesn't hide. There's some growing up to do there, but why would you have reason to expect that he would not mature and grow through that? I'd rather see the guy mad at being taken out of 4 2/3 innings and learn 5 years down the line when he's leading Cleveland to a pennant going, man, you know, but what a punk I was. That was on me. I'm the one who took myself out of that game because I threw too many pitches and I didn't throw strikes and didn't attack those hitters. But I just think it's more likely that he learns to do that than he goes through his life nibbling and walking 6 and 7-0 hitters when he has the stuff that he has.
The best way to put that to me is that his stuff is the stuff of very few pitchers in baseball.
And the knowledge that he has of pitching, and hopefully the fact that to this age, he has learned and soaked up a lot about pitching. I think it's amazing that you would expect that he won't adjust because he didn't adjust in one professional season. That's the part that's really kind of amazing to me.
That is. I think Ben put it a good way, which is you're not talking about a pitcher who's failed and you're trying to rebuild him. Yeah. You're talking about a pitcher
who has treated him that way.
They've treated him that way, but he's succeeded. You've got to remember, when we talk about this, he was pitching in Reno. Yeah. Reno's a disaster.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's there's no other way to put it. Reno's a disaster.
As far as for a pitcher.
For a pitcher. You know, I mean, Reno is, if you are a pitcher and you put up a 4 ERA, you had a great year.
That's right.
And Trevor Bauer had a great year in Reno. And again, what happened is you're talking about an organization, I don't think there's any other way to put it. They got focused on
the negative.
The importance of, as an organization, being in the control, in power. You know,
I think that's probably a fair criticism. I think that is.
I don't think there's any other way to explain this trade.
Because, I mean, unless the whole – even if Patrick Corbin and Charles Brewer, his fellow former UCLA pitcher, and Tyler Skaggs, all other guys in that Reno staff, didn't like him, even if he didn't fit in that clubhouse, I mean, he's got time to grow up. He turns 22 in January. I think we're all a little stunned.
And you invested millions of dollars in him.
Yeah, you did.
And the value of the number 3 pick in the draft.
Yeah, you did.
Not long ago. Not where you say, you know what, it's a sunk cost. We're 7 years in on this. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
It's the guy who's made the first guy from his class to make the big leagues.
It's like punting on second down.
A guy who has, again, there aren't many pitchers in the minors who have stuff like his. And you say, you know what, we're ready to get move on 18 months after you drafted him.
So the final verdict is win for Cleveland, pretty good for Cincinnati. You know, KT, good luck. Diamondbacks, I think Diamondbacks fans have reason to be pretty worried. Ben, a strong first take on your podcast from Boston. I hope that all the other ones are this easy to do.
Yeah, it was a good one.
It was a good one, and we'll have, and obviously, great job on the trade write-up. been a pretty active week on the Baseball America podcast. A lot of news. I guess if news keeps on breaking, we'll keep on podcasting. For Ben Badler and JJ Cooper, I'm John Manuel. We'll see you on the next Baseball America podcast. So long, everybody. Great stuff, Ben.